All right, here we are.
Yeah.
This is like a new combination. We've not done one of these before.
No.
I had an interesting day, so this is like, we're recording at like 8 p.m., I guess, for the audience at home, and for me, that is kind of late just because of how my week has gone, but yeah, we usually record in the middle of the day.
The middle of the day at my studio, otherwise known as my basement.
Yeah. Yeah.
Would be filled with lots of children in the background, which might make for a different kind of podcast.
Hi, Derek.
Hey, Sam. How's it going?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Great. What should we talk about today?
Oh my god, I have so many things. I could talk about Ruby auto formatters with you in detail, and like my bad style opinions and how far down I am in the parse.y hole. Although we did some of that last week, talked to you about changing my job, but actually it's been a while since the folks have heard from you. What's on your mind at the moment? What are you working on these days?
Still at GitHub. I'm working on projects that I can't talk about.
Damn it.
We did just recently ship some changes to issue templates.
Uh-huh.
That was kind of a small thing for a week or two of work. And we added the ability to add labels via issue template, add assignees via issue template, and also like suggest a title. Those are really like small scope changes, but people seem to be liking those. And I think I'd never really been one personally. This is Derek speaking as Derek and not as a voice of GitHub. I've never personally really liked issue templates because all they did for you is throw a bunch of text into the thing that you were going to enter text to. And like, I find that like, especially pull request templates, half the time I forget they were there and I submit like my nice pull request. And then there's like a bunch of like, hey, please submit. And I was like, I already have nice pull requests. Get out of my way.
Right. So one of the things I've always done is like, I'll sort of like, whatever the first thing that sees the light of day is usually has a really long commit message in it. And then I want that commit message to be like the text of the pull request. And so, yeah, like if I'm doing that, I don't necessarily want to follow your pull request template. Although I will say like a thing that would be awesome is if you could conditionally fire like templates on changed files, right? So one of the things I had to do when I worked previously at DigitalOcean is anytime you churn the require order of gRPC client, you are potentially introducing a segfault. And so like we had a blanket pull request template on this one repo that literally read H1 danger Will Robinson, like if you're changing this file, please ping this team before like opening this pull request. But so like that would be really cool.
Well, there's this thing called GitHub Actions, which could conceivably look at what's in the commit and then just like, it wouldn't template out your entire pull request, but it would certainly like be like, hey, we notice you're changing this.
Right.
Do you understand that these are the potential downsides of it? Can you tell us why you need to change this more specifically? Can you make sure you've thought about these three things? That kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. So this actually, I was thinking about using GitHub Actions to do like a bunch of scripting around open source governance things. So you know how like in Rust, they have their like bot that does all of the merging for them and like no one has the permissions to merge, but also sort of like going beyond that. So on the Ruby auto formatter that I'm building, like it's become very clear to me that as strong as my style opinions are, like I should not be the person to dictate style for the rest of Ruby for all time, right? Like, and I want sort of like there to be some kind of committee process for doing this, and I've been looking at like various open source projects like RFC things and how they work. And it seems like GitHub Actions plus some kind of RFC voting workflow is like could be like a really cool thing. Yeah.
Hmm. Why are you so afraid to inflict your opinions on the world?
So it's more a function of adoption, right? So like I have my own particular set of weird hills to die on. Other people have their weird set. So actually, I can give you a really good example of this of a conversation I was having with Justin Searles not like 1 hour ago. So if in Ruby you have a like assignment conditional, so like A equals if something one value else something else end, where do you put the else and the end, right? Do you align it with the A equals or do you align it with the if, right? And
do you want the correct answer or do you want
what is the correct answer, Derek? Because both are syntactically valid.
The correct answer is to align it, like to not indent the else, to just leave the else wherever the variable declaration was.
Okay.
Otherwise, I mean, I guess if you're dealing with auto formatters, it kind of changes the game. But like the reason why I use that is because if I change that variable name, I don't want to then go and re-indent the else and the end and all that other stuff. But if I'm dealing with an auto formatter, maybe I don't care that much.
Yeah, so there's no like actual absolute correct answer here, right? Like,
no, I mean, I'm correct, but yeah.
Right. And so thusly we enter into like the realm of infinite yak shaves, right? And Justin, mm-hmm. you know, Justin has called his thing standard RB. And Sean and I talked about this some last week, is that if you're going to call it standard, you better make sure that it looks like most of the Ruby that's out there in the universe, right? And so one of the things I'm sort of thinking through, well, firstly, at the moment, I'm just trying to get my head around parsing all of Ruby, which it turns out to be a nightmare. But then, like, I'm here using this more as an example than a, like, thing to talk about. But, like, how do you gather opinions from a wider community when, like, you want to facilitate adoption, right? Because, like, I'm pretty convinced that I could just take all of my opinions and put it into a tool and I would be very happy and no one would use it. But that's like, that's a huge waste of my time, right? If I just have a formatter that I like that I can never use with anybody else, like that's a huge waste of my time. For example, you may have seen my recent blog post that like hash rockets are good actually. A few weeks ago, just before RubyConf, when I published that, I was pretty far up that hill and like willing to die on it in extremely dense fashion. The point I've gotten to now is more one of like, it's not incorrect to have multiple kinds of hashes in your, like, it's not obviously incorrect. And so it's something that I'm probably going to end up allowing, right?
Yeah, I used to be on that hill with you, actually, many, many years ago, uh-huh. like back in 1.9 days, I was like, yeah, I get why having, when you have symbol keys, I get why this is better because you don't have to type a hash rocket and hash rocket's kind of an awkward thing to type. And that's better. But there are so many cases where I need string keys or I need something else. Or it was also common back in that time to be going between projects that ran on 1.8 and projects right. that ran on 1.9.
Right.
And it was like, it's just not, it's not worth it to teach myself this new hash syntax. And so like before I ever worked at Thoughtbot, they turned the comments off on the blog, thankfully. But like there was some comment about hash syntax. And I had a comment that was like, you can pry these hash rockets out of my cold, dead hands, basically. and yet they hired me a few months later, so it worked out okay. Maybe they hadn't read the comments. But yeah, I'm with you that like if you're trying to make something general purpose that maybe, but let me ask you this, would you go the other way? Would you go so far as to have your standard formatter take something that was written with hash rockets that could have been written with 1.9 syntax and transform it?
So that's a really interesting question. I think the answer is no. I think where I'm beginning to come down is like that I'm basically going to do my level best to preserve whatever the person has typed and just make it sort of formatted in a consistent manner, right? And so enforce trailing commas or make sure that all the indentation in the project uses exactly the same indentation methodologies, right? Not necessarily entirely wholesale replace constructs. So for example, I have no interest in doing a like replace unless not thing with if thing, right? If you type that, I trust that you type that for a good reason. But so I'm sort of open. The other thing is, I will say right now, is that I haven't solidified any of these opinions. And what I was actually noodling on today is like what I want my RFC process to look like. And to me, I want to ask a handful of questions. One is like, what is the change that you are proposing? Give me an example of like what the input would be and what the formatted code would be. Ideally, both like a straw example and a real world example, like show me some real piece of Ruby code that's open source today that this format would change. And as well as like what possible alternatives are. So like, for example, we just here talked about, well, what if I set a policy that like I was not going to replace hash rockets? An alternative is replace hash rockets, right? And then potentially what the opposite, basically, I sort of want people to be like, here's the thing I want to do. Here are some caveats. Here's why I think the thing that I want to do is good, and then have some kind of voting process, right? And like, to me, good, like things that will help score points is like, it's not edge cases or it minimizes git churn. Minimizing git churn is like a thing that I think auto formatters should do. For this reason, I'm probably going to avoid doing the like align all the hash key value, you know, like make the hash values be right aligned thing, which GoFumped does out of the box. But yeah, so like I really want to run like a very anyone can have input RFC process and then basically not stabilize the thing until like there have been no unapproved unmerged RFCs for like 6 months or something.
Yeah, that seems like a reasonable thing to do. You know, I was nodding along. People can't see, but I was mostly just nodding along as you were saying things. The git churn thing in particular, like I remember that being made to me as an argument for trailing commas on things many years ago, and me just being like, I don't care, I don't like the way it looks. But then, like, as I got more and more experience, I was like, yeah, but I don't really want to be associated with the line above me in the git blame. Like, I didn't touch that, so now I'm causing somebody to have to, like, do more work to figure out what was the last time this line really changed and why did it change.
Yeah.
And so the ability to, and so I've just started like trailing commas on everything, on arrays, on multi-line method calls, on like all sorts of stuff. You know, it's a trailing comma, and I've gotten over it, because like my reason against it before was always like, oh, it's like I read commas like I read them in English, so I'm like, there's a pause, like it's just like you're leaving me hanging, basically. Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
But git churn, I'm good with it.
Yeah, well,
I'm good with it as a reason.
Yeah, it's like, it's a useful principle to have. But like, I guess my raison d'etre for doing this is that I've been writing a lot of Go up until I left DigitalOcean. And like, the ability to just like hit save and the code just sort of snaps into place is such a lovely feeling. And we don't have a tool that can do that really in Ruby. Like, bundle exec rubocop -a on a single file just takes too long to execute. Like, it would frustrate my process. Right now, I'm able to round trip a 500 line file in like 40 milliseconds, which is a little longer than I would like, but is like definitely fast enough to not be annoying.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I dealt with one of these on an everyday basis was in Elm. And so I had it hooked up to Elm format every time I wrote a file.
Right.
And it would just reformat the file. And like you said, there wasn't one way to do things. It was just like, here's a format that the formatter is happy with.
Yeah.
And if I was particularly unhappy with it, I could look at it and be like, eh, that doesn't read nicely to me. And so I bet if I do this, this, and this, the formatter will still be happy.
Yep.
And then I would do it and the formatter's like, yeah, yep, that's cool too. And I'm like, all right, great, fantastic. I can move on now. But like, that was all the energy I was exerting, versus like, you don't even realize it when you have a piece of code and you're like, oh, I want to change it in this way. And like, your mind is not even realizing the number of times that you're modifying lines, like subsequent lines or previous lines, to adjust for the fact of the changes that you're making to the current line or something like that.
Right.
Where something you could just like, if you live in a world with an auto formatter, you're just like, I don't have to worry about that. When I write this file, that's all going to snap into place.
Yeah.
And then you do it and you're like, oh, great, I didn't have to go back and like delete that white space or whatever you needed to do.
Yeah. And like, one of the things I'm trying to do very hard here is to have like zero configuration. You will not be able to redictate like different tastes to the thing, right? Like, I'm really gonna aim for like, we spend a lot of time with a lot of people who write a lot of Ruby, like listening to their opinions and come up with something. Like, for example, if the formatter, you know, churns Rails's source code by more than 20%, or like RSpec's source code by that same amount, it's probably wrong, right? The truth is, those code bases are probably internally consistent enough in their formatting anyway, that like, if there's massive churn to be found in existing popular code bases because of a formatting tool like this, it's probably wrong anyway, right? This is really more about enforcing consistency, and I believe that those projects are close enough. And what would be interesting to see is if they're close enough to each other, right? But yeah, that's kind of where my head's at. This is funny, because like, if you had asked me this question sort of 2 or 3 weeks ago, I'd have been like, I'm going to decide what all the rules are, and then that's it. And then
that sounds like that's where the fun is in writing a formatter.
yeah, if you want zero adoption.
True. So let me ask you this then, having said that, and having, I know that you and Justin are friends, and I know we've already referenced this thing, why are you doing something different than what Justin's already doing, or Test Double is already doing?
Yeah, so
with standard.
So I sort of alluded to it earlier, right? And it's that I can't put RuboCop in my editor save hook and be happy. Right. RuboCop is built to do a completely different job. Like, RuboCop is not built to do this job. And I like frankly, at the time, like, I don't think ideas like GoFirmed were, or the Elixir formatter or the Cargo formatter were like as popular. Right. And so like, this tool doesn't really exist in Ruby. Like, RuboCop is pretty close, but it's not like, it's not really the same thing. And then like, there are sort of like formatting things that I would love to be able to express to RuboCop, which no matter how many times I've read the documentation, I just cannot make it do, right? I also like have strong disagreements with RuboCop's out of the box defaults, which is basically what Justin was trying to fix, right? Like, just like standard RB really is Justin wrapping RuboCop to format code how he thinks code should be formatted, which like hews a lot closer to the conventions of the community, right?
Yeah, I wasn't aware that standard was basically just an implementation of a configuration of
yep.
of RoboCop. So that's a perfectly legitimate answer. I thought this was going to be more like, well, I didn't agree with the choices made here, so I made my own.
No. And so actually, like, I'm very much trying to not start a religious war with Justin. In fact, I would say I'm doing the exact opposite of that. Like, Justin is sort of in my internal feedback loop right now. For example, because require is just a method call and I've been optimizing to not have special cases, the first time, like, I round-tripped a file with a require in it through my autoformatter, require came with parentheses out the other side. And I was like, that is clearly wrong. Like, that is definitely more consistent by, like, any argument you care to make, but is also clearly wrong, right? And so, like, that's just an example of where, like, the rules cannot be applied completely religiously, or otherwise you end up with something that looks just terrible, right?
Yeah. I'm curious to see. I should try one of these, or your thing, when it's available on some code that I write, because, I mean, not on GitHub stuff, because that would be insane, but on maybe some of my own stuff, because, like, I have all these internal opinions that I've tried to explain to people, like, when I'm okay with calling methods without parentheses, basically, which is, like, anything that resembles a DSL kind of thing, I'm okay.
Right.
Like, the router, you can call those methods without parentheses. People are like, those aren't methods. I'm like, yeah, they're methods.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what they are.
Well, a surprisingly large number of things turn out to be methods. So private is a method. Like, if you just have a private in the middle of your class, that's just a method call, actually. Private is not a keyword. Let me show you some formatted output so you can take a look and tell me what you think. So what happened here is that I put a file from RSpec into it, and it choked about a quarter of the way through on a syntax construct I haven't written the parser for yet. But the rest of this is, like, real output as it happens.
This the look on my face right now is me as I try and figure out where what you just sent me went. Like,
I slacked it to you in the Skype chat.
Yeah, it came up on my screen. It, like, it overlaid your face, and I clicked a bunch on it, but nothing happened. And now I have no idea where it went.
So you, like, click it.
How do I get to the chat part of the chat?
So you click the chat box in the bottom left of the Skype client.
Oh, that's a chat box. Look at that. There it is. Sam sent a link. He sure did.
let's keep it real loose.
So this is outputted code.
Yeah.
Let's see. What would I do here? I gotta have a space between line 4 and 5. Yeah. So this is, like, you have some requires, basically what amount to requires, and then you have the module directly on line 5.
Yep. Yeah. No.
Yeah,
So I will also note this is very much WIP, right? So, like, for example, the huge block of comments, and then, like, a constant being created, and then another huge block of comments, and then another constant being created, like, and then no blank line between, like, a call and a class. There's a ways to go here, but, like, you can at least see that it's beginning to take some form.
Yeah, I'd be okay with this. This is fine. Like, again, having asked me 5 years ago, and I would have been like, no, this is not how I want to write code, but, like, this seems reasonable, and if it just did this for me, like, it has the thing we talked about earlier, where you have, like, an assignment to a conditional, right?
Yeah.
You have a multi-line conditional that is prepended with an assignment. And it indents all the branches of the conditional to be left aligned while the assignment is, you know, further left.
Yeah. So actually, that turned out to be harder to implement than the style you suggested earlier. But I was mostly just trying to make sure that, like, it didn't fundamentally break the architecture of the, like, syntax tree walker to do it. Right. And so actually, I will tell you what the single hardest part of this is: preserving comments. So Ripper does not give you comments in the, like, parse tree of Ruby when you invoke it. And so, but it does give you the line number and character number positions of every single syntactical construct. So every time I enter a new line, I check to see if there was a block of comments that I, like, missed, and I, like, paste them in back into my immediate representation. Oh, yeah.
That's fun.
Yeah, no, like, this is... I'm really enjoying this because I'm learning, like, a whole bunch about how Ruby parses itself. So, like, the way constant lookups work, like, is a really interesting parse. So, like, if you have A colon colon B colon colon C colon colon D, every one of those items is an expression. So you can put colon colon, like, after any expression in Ruby, because, like, Ruby, and then, like, they're parsed leftmost inner, so it's like A colon colon B parenthesis colon colon C parenthesis colon colon D, which is like the exact opposite way that I would expect it to be parenthesized, but like just a real interesting programming language that we're dealing with here.
Yeah, I don't know. This looks good. I'm curious to see how it handles things that go over, like, is it going to wrap at 80 characters?
I don't know. File an RFC and suggest what the alternatives are.
Oh, no, I think it should wrap at 80 characters. I don't think there's an alternative. It's got to wrap somewhere. Why not 80?
Does it, though? Does it have to wrap? I don't know that it does. What if we left wrapping up to the people? I'm like kind of serious, because then you have to vend an opinion on wrapping. Like, for example, it's really funny. Once you start talking to people about auto formatters, it's a great excuse to get them to tell you all of their style opinions. So here's how I line wrap long RSpec expressions, which are usually the longest lines that I write. I use parentheses as an excuse to break lines. So I will write like expect something dot to, and then have a space, and then like receive something, and then with, and then the opening parenthesis on the with will be where I line break, and then I'll have all of my arguments to with like on separate lines, and a closing parenthesis that matches up with the expect. Some people break on dots. What's your take?
I will do either one of those.
Okay.
Depending on the, like, and it doesn't help for an auto formatter. I think it depends on like which result I like better, but I'm cool with like using the open parentheses or like an open curly brace if you're passing a hash or something like that as an excuse to be like, yeah, okay,
yeah.
Line break.
Yeah.
And then putting the closer lined up with the beginning of the line you broke from.
Yes. I guess. So for me, this comes from like deeply, deeply ingrained Java style. Java is the first programming language I ever learned, and I programmed like an awful lot of it when I was a kid. Doing the like curly on the one line and then the like matching curly that aligns with the thing with the first curly declared is like very deeply harmonic with my soul. And so that's just how I want code to look.
Let me ask you, now that we're talking about curlies, it doesn't particularly matter in Ruby, I guess, but maybe in JavaScript. If you have an if and an else, the curlies for the else, does it go curly, else, curly, or is there a line break in there anyway?
No line breaks. Just okay, two curlies on the line with the else.
I didn't used to do it that way. And then like something like 8-10 years ago, somebody was like, no, do it this way. And they showed it to me. And I was like, why have I not been doing this my whole
yeah,
life?
Yeah, it's it's very like this, that particular style of where to put the parentheses, like deeply aligns with my soul. Like, and it always has. I don't know why. I may need help, but here we are.
Yeah, the wrapping thing, that when you were like, do we have to? And it's like, again, that's the kind of thing that I might want to enforce on my project. Like, I might want to say like, hey, as a matter of style, we don't go over 80 characters.
Yeah,
or whatever.
This is interesting,
but I don't necessarily think it's a matter of formatter that we're going to live with.
This is also interesting because like it's a thing the formatter could do for you, but it gets real tricky real fast, because like the moment you're doing that, you have to consider like very like how big very large syntax units are when they're like entirely flattened out. And like right now I don't like, basically right now the actual architecture is such that it's just serializing code basically immediately into a file. Like, it walks the syntax tree. There is actually an intermediate step, but I don't have syntax in the intermediate step. I have like fragments of text. Like, I have def, like an array that contains like def and a single space and like the symbol self and like the symbol period, right? And then like it all gets two-est and joined together and serialized out. So like I would not be able to do any kind of like line length detection on your behalf. I would be able to detect, but I wouldn't be able to fix it for you at this point. I don't actually know that I have a good answer for how I could do that.
Yeah, the thing is like, you know, the more I think about it, the formatter doesn't have to have opinions on everything, right?
Yeah.
It can just be like, here's what I can do really well.
Yeah, well...
And then beyond that, like, let's just try and live in a society here, people.
I really like and appreciate the idea of a strongly opinionated formatter tool that deliberately has no opinions in some places. And in fact, this is, I think, one that we might just decide on this podcast is not going to... I can give you an error if a line that gets omitted is wider than 100 characters. Also, I refuse to acknowledge 80 characters as the correct limit. I think it's 100, but, like, whatever.
Yeah.
I will tell you that GoFirmed does not stop you from doing this. It's just, it's very rare to write lines of Go code that are that long. Unless you have a really long method name, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, it's really interesting. I can't remember the last time I organically wrote a line of Ruby code that was wider than 80 characters. Like, I sort of, out of habit, will break those things apart. And I don't know, given that you've worked with a much wider range of Ruby people more recently than me, like, do you find that that's common?
Really long lines? Yeah. Yes, definitely.
Huh.
Really long lines, and then the worst is when they're really long, and then at the end, there's like a if, blah, blah, blah. You're like, no, I worked through this entire line, and then there's an if at the end. Like, I don't even, like, and you're like, that doesn't apply. I could have just skipped this entire line.
So you want to know a thing that's really funny about how the parser gives you the, like, expression if expression? It's backwards. The conditional is the first item in the array, and the expression is the second item in the array.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like one of the hills that I wouldn't say I'm willing to die on it, but like, there are very few places where I'm cool with a trailing conditional like that. And I've learned to just kind of like, I guess I'm not willing to die on it, because what I've learned is like, I've lost.
So,
and like, people want to put that conditional in the end.
I very much like to have a method which starts with a big block of like return if or return unless, mm-hmm. and that to sort of prevent having to nest further down. Right, like that can be really nice. I actually recently wrote a Ruby method that literally 100% of its lines were return true or return false if, and so it was just like a big messy nested Boolean fall through that was much easier to express in the terms of like return true if this user attribute, return false if this user attribute, as opposed to like this and this and this and like if this user is 30 days ago, right? Like it's much easier to like see those fallouts than like work out what the ampersand like situation is doing.
And those were always the things I was cool, like I was always okay with those guard clauses at the beginning,
right?
But to the point where like if you did something on line one and then you put a block of guard clauses, I was like nope, you already did some work on line one. You can't do that.
No, I will give you that one freely and happily. Is that like the guard clauses should be at the top, and that's it.
Yeah. Again, it seems to be a battle I lost. The Ruby formatter thing like is interesting, because like when auto formatters first, like when Go came out, it probably wasn't the first one, but it was like one of the first ones I remember hearing about that was like, oh, and you know what's great? It automatically formats your code. And I was like, cool, let me look at it. And I was like, tabs, I'm out of here. I was like, how can we get one of these in Ruby? And the answer has always been, and I think that, you know, you're supporting this to some extent, is that like, it's just really freaking hard technically, never mind the like, how do we get a community to agree in any large part on one style after it's been live for so long?
Yeah, so like, I'm definitely putting in the legwork. The formatter that I'm writing will sort of just form the basis of like the place for people to have these arguments, right? It's actually really interesting. You mentioned this in Go. So the authors of the Go language deliberately designed tooling friendliness into the language. They like made sure that like it was easy to work with the parsed representation of the language. It was easy to work with the IR, you know, all of that stuff. And so like the reason, for example, we don't just have Go firmt, but also Go lint and Go vet, is that like it's actually really easy for you to introduce new behaviors into those tools. Like they're actually extensible, and like I don't know how much Go you've worked with, but basically everyone has a full checkout of like all of their dependencies source code in their repo, right? Go is the mono repo language, and so like you can just augment the linter with new lints that are specific to your domain or language really easy. I guess your domain language of like your system really easily, because like they designed the built-in linting tool to be extensible from the ground up, which I think is a really cool behavior. Ruby, on the other hand, does not have this at all, right? The parse tree from Ruby is like one of the most interestingly creative things to deal with. Like, parser complexity is both a blessing and a curse, right, with Ruby. But yeah, I'm pretty confident that in a couple of days, I'm not going to commit to this, but like, soon, I should, you know what, this is giving me horrible flashbacks to like bike shed episodes where Sean would commit to like a diesel thing being done and then it wasn't done. Soon, my hope is to be able to like round trip files out of RSpec and Rails without destroying, like without breaking any tests and without destroying any documentation. And once that's the case, then like, it's really open season for like, how should we actually format these things, right? Like, mm-hmm. when do we whitelist parentheses? For example, if you're calling like class macros, should we just whitelist parentheses on all class macros? Or like, should we like have a list of the ones that are allowed, right? Actually, I will say I have one thing I think I'm probably going to choose to do that I think not many people do, but I think everyone could learn to love. It's to do with Atta readers, Atta accessors, and Atta writers. So most people, right, do Atta reader and then like have a big long list of the things, right, with no parentheses. And this is horrible because if you want to add one, you like cause git churn, right? Eric Hodel showed me what instantaneously became my favorite way to do this ever at RailsConf in Pittsburgh when I was pairing with Jonan Scheffler on his live stream. And it goes like this. You do Atta reader A, Atta reader B, Atta reader C, all on their own separate lines. And then if you want to add one or delete one, you just add one or delete one, right? And I thought this was really cool. This instantaneously became my favorite way to do it because I've always hated doing it with parentheses and a trailing comma. And so I think this is what we're going to do to people.
I used to prefer that as well and only yielded when it became clear that I was in the severe minority. If you want to take that fight on, go for it.
Yeah. yeah. I mean, we'll see. The thing is, with that in particular, like, I don't think it's unpopular because it's got like an inherent badness to it. I think it's unpopular just because like people would never think to do it that way, right? Like, it's such a interesting way of doing it that the first time I saw this, I was just like, you're an amazing genius. And also, I've been programming Ruby for like more than half a decade at this point, and nobody's ever shown me this way of doing it. This is incredible.
I did it at first when I was like first writing Ruby and was very quickly told by people who were reviewing my code to not do it that way. They were like, you can do this in one call, do it in one call. And I was like, all right. And then I kind of got over it. But like, the reason why I liked it is because I have opinions on the order those should be. I don't think a formatter needs to do that. But like, if I want to go and add a new attribute, now I need to, not only do I need to like cause git churn, I have to like figure out where in the list I want this thing. And it's harder to do when they're not all just like,
oh, are you like alphabetically ordering them or something?
I'm alphabetically ordering unless I have a specific reason not to. It's like some sort of meaningful order to them.
Okay.
Is what I like.
Yeah. That's some like,
but I don't need a formatter to do that for me.
No.
And I don't need anybody else to live by my rules either. Like, that's not a thing I would ever comment on in anybody else's code, but I want to be free to do it in my own, I guess.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
So one of the things that I've been thinking about as like the most ambitious possible extension to this is I have this really specific way of ordering methods in a class. So I will always have it so that calls point downwards. But that forces you to do topological sorting, right? Because like some things will point, like have multiple things pointing down to them. Some things will point down into multiple, like, and so there's like it's not necessarily always immediately obvious what the ordering should be, but like that's trivially easy for something which has a parse of your Ruby code to be able to figure out. And so like, this will probably not make it into the main thing, but might be like an extension that I have available to myself is like, on save, all of my methods snap into the exact correct ordering that I want them to be in. And then like versus public, private, and you know, all of that good stuff.
Yeah. And that's, I've heard that referred to as story order before. So like you're reading a story. And so like you get introduced to the top level thing and then you're like, oh, what does that mean? And you're like, oh, it's the next thing here in this file. It tells me.
Right.
And oh, what does that mean? And like you mentioned, it gets a little complicated when you have two methods that both call this one private method that both call this other thing, but like the second one only needs this other method. And at that point, like I'm okay with hand wavy stuff in myself. But if like a formatter could just be like, this is probably the best way you want, I'd go with that.
Well, this problem has a name and it's topological sorting, right?
Right.
And so like Unix literally has a command line tool called tsort built into it.
Yep.
To do this. And so like, it's the sort of thing you could do. This is probably like not going to happen given that like, this is my sort of like, vacation, calm down, writing some Ruby again project, but we'll see where we get. I would really, really like to build, like have a thing that people can use to actually like do their jobs in like the next month or so. That would be great.
I can tell you on that specific point in my consulting work, people have opinions on the order that methods should be in.
Oh no, sorry, I don't mean the method orderer. I mean just like the formatter in general. Like
I
would like it to not destroy your Ruby files. And actually, this is another hard problem, is that there are a lot of Ruby versions in the world, and parsing them is ambiguous and, like, stuff, right? There's a lot of stuff that has to be worked out here, and I'm, like, at the very beginning of this journey right now, but it's, like, very exciting to me.
So how are you, you've mentioned a couple times this idea of having, like, an RFC process.
Mm-hmm.
How do you envision that working? So, like, I could see, like, we started talking about this, about, like, having votes and things like that.
Yeah.
Like, do you see this as like a democratic process, a directly democratic process where it's like, hey, whoever gets the most votes wins? Or are we seeing, are you like electing a Senate?
Yeah.
And then you,
yes. So what I thought I would do is like have a like core team, and those are the people who get to vote on the RFCs, but then have the core team themselves be like elected by the core team, right? So like one of the things I'm trying to avoid is any kind of benevolent dictator for life style model. Like I'm fully willing, if everyone else in the world thinks this is the right idea, to merge style opinions that go violently against my own, right? Like for the goodness of the community. Like, and so, and as I said to you, like I've been thinking a little bit about just how to do open source governance around something like this in a way that doesn't suck. And so to me, like the first thing to do is like bootstrap in a team of people who will actually care enough to read like the RFCs and give them thought and make suggestions and updates and that sort of thing. I want Searles in. I've name dropped him enough times in this podcast, that should be obvious. But I also want some like newer Rubyists. Like the problem is for a lot of us, right, we carry the baggage of like 1.8, 1.9, 2.1, 2.2, right, with us. And so I want some people who have like never seen Ruby versions lower than like 2.3 and 2.4 in there. I think that would be really valuable. I think anyone should be able to submit an RFC. And I think like basically that process is then there's some like comment cycles. Eventually there's like an up down vote, or possibly like an up down vote with down being if somebody has proposed alternatives, that then the alternatives get a vote, right? And then like for me, there's also an idea of stabilization. So like I don't want to release a 1.0 on something like this until there have been like no new like serious style changing RFCs in like a 6 month period, right? Or like some long period of time, right? So the idea being that one, like getting to a 1.0 on a tool like this is basically like the last major version it will ever have, because breaking means like I can significantly churn your gits, and like there should almost never be a reason to significantly churn your gits, right? Like if we're deciding this is how code looks, that because like Go firmed has literally not changed how it formats Go since Go 1. And so I don't see any reason why this tool should either, once it's like largely agreed upon that it's doing the right thing.
Right. The only changes to it would have to be like, if you're doing this when in like, I don't know what, Ruby 2.0 or something like that, and they were like, now we have named arguments,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And like, even that, you'd probably just be like, eh, it's just a hash. Maybe it would be different, but
yeah. So,
you
know, so it's
like if there was some new thing introduced to the language that you needed to handle, I guess.
So like, yeah. So like, for example, the lonely operator, if this tool had existed before the lonely operator came along, the lonely operator would not have been breaking, because the lonely operator is valid in all the positions that the period is valid. Right. So like you just treat it like a period. Right. And so it's kind of stuff like that. Right. So we'll see. I mean, Ruby 3, who knows? There may be all kinds of crazy new syntax in Ruby 3. But yeah, it's the sort of thing where like the only time that would happen is with Ruby versions. And ideally, you would do it in such a way that you cause the minimum amount of disruption possible.
Ooh.
Yeah. Like,
yeah, sign me up.
Cool. Well, I mean, yes, it's real funny. This is like going on a little bit of a podcast tour. I'm going on Noel Rappin's podcast on Tuesday to talk about more of the same. So I accidentally started marketing this thing way too early in its existence.
Just because you're not comfortable with the fact that you've gotten the ability to like properly round trip a file in and out of Ruby?
Yeah. So I know for a fact I can't round trip most of Ruby correctly right now. Like I can round trip plenty of like individual test cases and like a substantial chunk of like files in RSpec, but that's not like all of Ruby, right? And I think once I'm not destroying Ruby files, I will feel very good about being like, all right, internet, I'm probably gonna like actually write up like this RFC process in more detail in full, elect a handful of like first stage core team members and hope to grow, and then we'll just start arguing. Like this really, like what I'm doing here is writing a piece of software that enables me to have arguments with people on the internet.
Those always go so well.
Yeah. Oh no, we got our clipping laugh in.
Show notes for this episode of the Yak Shave can be found at yakshave.fm/11.
As always, ratings and reviews on iTunes are appreciated.
If you have feedback about this episode or any other episode, you can tweet us @_yakshave. Email us at hosts@yakshave.fm or leave a comment on the website.
Thanks for listening to the Yak Shave, and we'll see you next time.